Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Robots Radio presents...
The Cyberbuck Lorecast.
Welcome to the Cyberpunk Lorecast, where style is just as important as substance. Welcome to the podcast where we explore the lore, news, and gameplay of the cyberpunk games and other dystopian worlds. I'm your host, Robots.
Welcome back, cyberpunks. This is the Cyberpunk Lorecast, and this is your host, Tom, or Robots, and it is time again for another patron episode. It's the end of January already. Man, does time fly. And I have with me some of our returning favorite patrons. We've got Lena back with us. Lena, welcome. How's it going?
It's going good. Happy to be here.
Yeah, happy to have you joining us again. And then we also have Turbo Toboggan. Turbo, how you doing, buddy?
Hello.
Welcome, welcome.
Hi.
Hey, so this week we are wrapping up. I believe this is our last movie of our original movie discussion that we started way back, what was that, like 6 months ago? We were talking about cyberpunk movies that we decided were worth seeing and discussing. And we're down to my pick because I suggested we all watch the Blade Runner movies, and specifically Blade Runner 2049, because I had the hot take, the controversial opinion that it might actually be the better of the two movies. And there are a lot of people out there that disagree with that, but that's fine. I'm totally fine with that. And I'm open to a conversation about that. And Logan and I, we did some episodes, we talked about this stuff, but I want to hear your thoughts on this because this is one of those seminal movies in the cyberpunk genre. There are elements of cyberpunk throughout the films. I would argue that the second of the two films is significantly more cyberpunk than the first, when you look at some of the elements that are used in the film. But I want to get into your thoughts on these movies. So let's start with some of your background and when you saw the movies. Lena, let's start with you. Are you new to the films? When did you first see Blade Runner and then Blade Runner 2049?
Okay, so the original Blade Runner, I think I saw it when I was like on a trip on watching all kinds of classic old movies. Uh-huh. That sounds so mean.
Well, I mean it's a almost 40-year-old movie. It's over a 40-year-old movie.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
1982, right? Yeah. I mean, so I've watched it like 5 years ago, the original Blade Runner, and then, or like I watched it before like Blade Runner 2049 came out. Mm-hmm. And I think I've watched it maybe once or twice, and I liked it a lot. I liked the style. I liked Harrison Ford. I liked the story. I basically liked everything about it, and I get why it's a classic. So this is a movie which I watched, and I was just like, no matter how old this is, this will always be a classic. And then I was like, okay, there's a sequel coming. Ryan Gosling is in it.
Right?
Harrison Ford is in it. Okay, this is weird. And then I went to the cinema and I was literally blown away. So beforehand, just to get this out of the way, I am a fangirl of Denis Villeneuve's movies.
Okay.
Dune, Blade Runner, Sicario, like all of these movies, they have blown my mind, and like the cinematography of all of those movies. Uh-huh. Chef's kiss.
So, chef's kiss. Wonderful.
I mean, like, and I think we'll get into this, but I also think, hot take, Blade Runner 2049 is the better movie, in my opinion.
Oh, all right. Kindred spirits on this. All right, Turbo, when were you introduced to these movies?
I didn't see any of them in theaters. Well, I couldn't see Blade Runner. I'm too young for that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the oldest of the three of us, and I was 2 or 3 years old when that was in the theaters. So,
Blade Runner, the original, I only saw it in bits and pieces for like the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually I just, I forget how old I was, but I watched it when I was, over at a relative's house. It was just on TV one day and I just watched it.
Yeah.
Not knowing what it was until, after like halfway through, and I, when my relatives, I asked them, like, what are we watching?
right. Yeah, it's one of those, like, it just happened to come across it on TV. Yeah, that happens.
Not realizing they're like saying Blade Runner in the TV show, me realizing that's the title of the movie.
Yeah.
And then
right.
The one, Blade Runner 2049, I did not see in theaters. I waited until it came out, and then I eventually, like, I saw it like on TV and stuff. Or I, DVD. I watched on the TV now on the big screen.
Yeah, so both relatively recently.
Yeah, I watched. Yeah. I watched Blade Runner 49 yesterday night or morning. My days blend together, mm-hmm. And then the regular Blade Runner. I rewatched that like during the last week.
Yeah, so you caught back up on those again. Okay, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
Just a redo.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so my original. Julian's joining us here. Hold on. Let's. We'll get another person into the chat here. J-Ray. Is connecting with the audio. We started a little bit early, so we're gonna get J-Ray in here. We'll give J-Ray just a minute. J-Ray, can you hear us?
Hey
buddy.
What's up?
Hey, we already started the show. We're talking about the Blade Runner movies and when we first watched them. Tell us about your experiences with Blade Runner. When did you first watch Blade Runner and then also Blade Runner 2049?
I first watched Blade Runner with my dad. That was a long time ago. I don't think I fully understood it, so I watched it again in the past year.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of blew my mind. And then I watched Blade Runner 2049 right after that. And honestly, it might have been a more fun watch in my, for me. Maybe it's just because the visuals were more updated, or a bit more action.
Yeah. I get that. Okay. So, got it. Yeah. So I originally watched Blade Runner in college the first time I saw it. And then, again, more recently, a few years ago. And then I think when the second film came out, went back and rewatched it and then caught up on the second film as like, it's been a long time since I've seen this movie. What was it about again? Because, you know, you go 15, 20 years from watching a movie and you start just kind of having these echoes of it in your head. You know, you're just kind of like, I remember this scene and I remember this scene, but what happened between those two scenes? Like those kinds of things. So caught back up on that stuff. So, all right. So the reason why I included this, these movies as the, you know, to be included in our must watch cyberpunk films is because so much of what, and Logan and I talked about this on previous episodes, so much of what people think about when they think about cyberpunk is influenced by the original Blade Runner. This idea of like, these like buildings upon buildings, and it's always raining and it's dark out, and the noodle stand, and the
flying cars
and the you know,
made up languages.
Yeah, the mix of the languages and the juxtaposition of like the gritty streets and the old mixed in with the new, the neon and the light, the, I don't know, the what's the word for it, the images that just kind of stand out in the middle of nowhere, the holographic neon images standing in front of these old concrete buildings, and like the juxtaposition of like the technology and the things that fall apart, you know, all of that stuff. Looks like J-Ray's trying to join us a second time. Jay, you having issues here? Hey, there's two J-Rays.
Yeah, sorry.
There
you go. Is much better.
No problem. I got you connected now. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted to include this. And then in thinking about Cyber or thinking about Blade Runner, the original movie, and then moving on to 2049, so much of 2049 is interesting in my opinion because it's almost redundant because it is influenced by the movies that were influenced by Blade Runner. Then think about it. You have Blade Runner influencing genres of movies. And when you think about some of the movies that we've discussed in just on this podcast, even the anime stuff and the Matrix and these other films, so many of them were influenced by Blade Runner. And then the movie makers now 30 plus years later working on 2049 have been influenced by all of those movies and stories and imagery and all of that stuff, are making 2049, and they're being, it's like two steps removed in a way. It's all being influenced by the influence. You've got kind of this cycle. It's coming all the way back around, which is part of why I think we see some of this more cyberpunky kind of imagery in 2049. Not only is the world a little bit further in the future, but it's more fleshed out, and it fits more into this, I don't know, this image in our heads of what we think that world is supposed to look like, even if it wasn't shown to us in the original Blade Runner. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
What do you guys think? Because I want this conversation to center around mostly around 2049. We've talked a lot about Blade Runner, but I want to talk about 2049, the world, the technology, the way the world is, your impressions of it. How you think it stands up as a cyberpunk movie? Is it cyberpunk, or is it just kind of a dark future? And let's talk about some of the elements of cyberpunk. Does it have that whole the stratification between the corporations and the governments and all of those people, the people who at the top who have everything and the majority of the people down at the bottom who don't?
Totally. Yes. And I think it's more cyberpunk than the original film just because the genre of cyberpunk wasn't fully fleshed out. You know, Blade Runner was one of the couple catalysts that caused cyberpunk to really flourish. So I feel like 2049 is like the most cyberpunk, one of the most of all time. I mean, you got neons, you got, you know, oh God, what's the corporation Jared Leto is the helm of?
Wallace.
Right. And they're experimenting with, you know, the idea of what it means to be human and what if technology is as valuable as life and vice versa. And you got kind of the whole joy toy thing, which is what you find in Cyberpunk 2077. Mm-hmm. Using, you know, in Cyberpunk 2077, they have the chip that turns humans into essentially sexual robots. And then in Blade Runner 2049, they just use robots themselves. Or I guess replicas.
Replicants. Yeah. And in 2049, they've solved the replicant issue in some ways, which, you know, the issue was they had issues with the replicants in the original Blade Runner. They only lived so long, and some of them were malfunctioning and were looking for autonomy, and they supposedly solved that in 2049. So that's all kind of changed by that point in the story.
Also, the use of artificial intelligence, you know, having Ana de Armas play an artificial girlfriend that anyone on Earth can access with her own, I forget what her name was, Joy. Wasn't it just Joy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there's so many topics that there's so many directions we can go in this story. Let's start broad and kind of narrow down. Do you feel like the stratification is different from the first movie to the second movie? Do you like, in my opinion, we don't see as much stratification between the haves and the have-nots in the original Blade Runner. The average Joe that you come across in the street doesn't look destitute. They look like the common worker.
Mm.
Yes.
Does that make sense? They all seem like just common Joe Schmo going about their daily job.
They all, the only really big difference thing is like from the big corporate guy, and then you just go straight to everyone on the street. But there's like it's like one guy that's a big giant gap, and then all the people on the street. But in the second one, you see the big giant guy or everyone else, and then you see the people that live out in the junk and stuff.
So yeah,
you can see the difference between high, very low middle class, typically, because that guy is like the 1%. I say 1% middle class, and then hobos, practically.
Right, right. Well, like the
homeless,
the home, like the junkers who live out on the dregs of society. Those kids
taking apart the.
Right, right.
There's also a middle class you see of those who are kind of surviving in the city. You know, those on the streets.
The middle. That's why I said middle class.
Oh, sorry, I misheard you.
Yeah,
yeah.
They essentially added a Badlands to the movie.
Yeah,
right, right. And you see more of that stratification. Now, that doesn't mean that it didn't exist in the lore of the world, but we don't actually see any of that in the first movie.
Dude, the visuals of his car. I guess hover car going through that was honestly, it was mind blowing. It kind of reminds me, I mean, it was directed by Denis Villeneuve, who did Dune, but that same look of the dragonfly vehicles going through, just otherworldly.
Yeah. So that also connects to some of the other things that happen in the cyberpunk genre, this concept of And this also happens in Cyberpunk 2077. This idea of what's the word? The natural. I'm losing words. I'm sorry. It's been a long day. The Earth and the climate change going amok. Like, human beings have polluted the world to the point where climate is absolutely messed up. And we get a sense of that in the first film. It's constantly raining. It's dark and dreary out. Why is that the case? Well, there's something wrong with the climate. But in the second movie, we get this very, very strong sense of the places where people live are manufactured. And people have to live in very confined environments. And if you live outside of these confined environments, the world is a mess. And then they go to Las Vegas, and like Las Vegas is condemned. It is like, you are not, so, like, this is a no-go zone. It is not safe for human beings out here. You do not go out here. And there's
isn't it because like a nuke went off, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's the sense that like war, natural disasters, like whatever, all of these kinds of things have led human beings to live in these megacities, it seems like. And even like seawalls, like the oceans have risen to a certain point where they need seawalls to keep out the ocean from, you know, coming in to where people are currently living in these cities. Like at the end of the film, you get the sense of like, there's no beach. There's no natural boundary between the ocean and the land. It's all built. And it seems like it's that way for a reason, because like it has to be. Did you guys get that sense?
Yeah. I mean, when I was watching the end, I kind of like recalling it, I kind of forget, you know, how they even got into the water there.
No, well, it's like the waves were coming up and like pulling the
but like that was right on the coastline.
It was right on the coastline, but it wasn't like a the coastline. It was like a manufactured coastline. It wasn't, you know, like it didn't feel like a natural environment, is my point.
Were you guys surprised to see that Harrison Ford had a dog in it?
I thought that was interesting. Yeah.
Natural.
Yeah. Animal. Like, yeah. Cause I'm like, any animal around there is like, I couldn't figure out, are all animals dead or just most?
Well, and the question is it a naturally born animal or was it a like replicated animal?
Hmm. That's it. Yeah. That's what I was saying. Cause if all animals are dead, then it's definitely replicated, but dogs, or is it a because dogs survive here on Earth? Like, there's dogs that were once domesticated that just leave on the road. They become wild dogs. They like there's wild dogs in regular cities, like major cities and stuff.
Sure. Or was it cloned? You know, like there's questions about that. Yeah.
But I mean, in the lore of the original cyberpunk, I've also read the book by Philip K. Dick, and I mean, the whole story behind it is that basically all animals are dead.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what's wondering.
Yeah, I mean, they are all dead, and then you have like the Wallace Corporation and the Tyrell Corporation who started cloning the animals, and people who have real animals are like the 1%. Like, people who have real animals is like a social status thing, as well as the whole thing of, well, we're leaving Earth and going to colonies because like there's now better places for us, and like people rotting on Earth with the replicants, we don't care about them. So
there's those themes. What other cyberpunk themes can you think about? What about the idea of the rebellion against the haves, the coming together of the have-nots against the haves?
That's more of it. It seems like there's going to be more of that in 2049, at least where it was going. Because like at the end, like when he's injured and he meets the other, he's picked up by the other replicants. Now they're saying they're going to rebel and stuff. There's more of it in that, because in the first one, it's really just one replicant rebelling. In the second one, it seems like there's going to be at least a good maybe 40 are rebelling. At least that's what looks like it shows up.
Mm. So you, in your mind, the replicants are the downtrodden. They are the ones who are rebelling against the haves, well, which is interesting because they're not
slaves, humans, technically. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. This is another point that somebody on Twitter, one of our listeners, pointed this out to me. And I think it's really interesting that in Blade Runner and in some of the other movies that we've talked about, Blade Runner and in Ghost in the Shell and in Judge and Dredd, the movies are based around the perspective of the police, which is the opposite of most cyberpunk stories or traditional cyberpunk, because the police are one of the structures of the government. But in something like Akira, it's based around the street punks. The street punks are rebelling against everybody else, right? That's traditional cyberpunk. They're the punks. But in these stories, the main focus is from the perspective of the police. But what's interesting about these stories is oftentimes the police character goes through some sort of story arc where they no longer side with the traditional perspective of the police. So in the case of something like Blade Runner, whether it's Deckard or the main character in 2049, they come to some understanding that changes their perspective by the end of the film. Or even Dredd. He's like the best at what he does, but he's not corrupt like the rest of the police. He's different from the rest of them. Right. So it's interesting. It's like taking cyberpunk in a way and kind of turning it on its head.
Yeah. What's interesting about the police in a cyberpunk era is that they're kind of in this chasm where they're not really treated as corpos. They're kind of hated by the public and viewed as disposable.
They're government.
The government.
They're tools of the government, right? The individuals are tools of the government. The police organization is the government, right? So the individuals who are working as officers are in a way kind of stuck in the middle, to your point. They're kind of in that middle zone, which is this interesting place, which kind of in a way allows some of those individuals to play the punk role and rebel against their status and the fact that they're being abused or, you know, tread upon or whatever by their superiors or the organization on top of them or whatever, and therefore they're playing the punk role. But it's interesting that so many of the movies that we picked out are from the perspective of the police. I thought that was just really kind of an interesting coincidence.
I didn't even notice.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. Yeah. But like something like The Matrix, it's like they're the punks, right? They're the downtrodden who are rebelling. Akira, they're the punks. They're the downtrodden who are rebelling. So I thought that was interesting. All right. So what other elements do we have that are very cyberpunk that kind of come out in this?
Mods for the human body.
Mm. Body modification. Okay. So where do we see body modification in 2049?
Well, it's we see it for at 2049, we see it with like the main he commands the main bad guys. The main bad guy is the girl
Love, but
he commands Terrell. That I don't know, he's not Terrell, he's
creepy dude. Yeah,
the creepy dude with the blind dude that has to have like that. He has like this little chip in his side that when you plug it in, it turns like this little light bulb at the base of his ear that lets him control like these little hovering beans. I don't know what they are. They look like cameras.
Yeah,
they look like hovering beans that just fly around and let him see.
Right. Yeah.
That was Wallace, right?
That's super weird.
Well, yeah, but he's super creepy.
So creepy.
But I mean, already in the first like sequence of the film, you can see that Kay also has probably some kind of body modifications, because like Sapper slams his head, his body through a wall. Mm-hmm. Like you cannot survive this if you don't. I thought that was have...
Well, it's part of it is, yeah, that he's a replicant. And so he's a little bit more hardy than a regular human. So you end up with a replicant on replicant battle where they're both more resilient than people are. But that's a good question. Like, how much of him is biological and how much of him is underneath the surface is actually modified?
They got super strength, at least. That's what the thing says.
Yeah. I mean, as a replicant, they do have super strength. And we know that from the first film. You know, Deckard at the end being hunted by sexy shirtless man. Like, his, you know, he's got, you know, superhuman strength.
Werewolf. And stuff.
Right. But
and then
what was that?
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just kind of expanding on that. But yeah, there is body modification. That is a thing. What about when we see Kay talking to like the women, like being out among the population? Do we see anything in there that screams cyberpunk?
Oh my God, I just want to say, I've watched this movie yesterday and there's a scene with Ryan Gosling eating his whatever goo that is with like the brothel on the side. And I mm-hmm. was just like, this could be Jig Trick Street, like straight off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is basically Jig Trick Street.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Very much so. Yeah, and this is the whole like one thing influences another, influences another, influences another. Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a lot of Blade Runner influence in 2077. The character designs and location designs and all of that stuff. It's very, very, very much in there. Okay.
When did 2049 come out? Was that 2017?
So yeah.
2018,
2016, 2017, something like that. Blade Runner
2017.
Yep.
What did you guys think about the following of Harrison Ford's character, how he almost had a religious following? You know, when Ryan Gosling's Kay was saying that he thought he was a child, you know, the woman's response was, well, don't we all want to be the child of him? You know, he was almost like a figure of worship.
Yeah, a fictional character that everybody kind of.
It's like he's the one, like where the Matrix came in with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know,
everyone wants to be the special person.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the idea of a replicant and a human being able to have a child together would make for religious storytelling. I mean, it's, you know, it's similar in some ways to a virgin birth. And to be the father of that
Jesus
situation is important, you know, and there are going to be people who are, I mean, that's part of the premise of the whole movie, is that's why he's hiding out, is because he doesn't want that attention, because there are definitely people who don't want him around. Yeah. So people know about him, and it's an unwanted attention. So absolutely. I think that also plays into some of this cyberpunk, I don't know, quality, it's aesthetic, this idea that human beings are grasping for something beyond, something more. Mm-hmm. This idea that they're looking for that. I think the whole premise of the movie is actually very cool. So do you guys have any other thoughts on any of the other cyberpunk qualities of the movie? Do you think it stands up with some of the other movies that we've seen? Do you feel like 2049 is like big cyberpunk, or do you feel like it's mostly cyberpunkish, cyberpunk influenced?
For me, it's big cyberpunk. And another note I wanted to touch on was the ability, just the memory architect, you know, just that ability to get to those fine details, create all these fictional worlds for people. Mm-hmm. And how it's like, you know, Johnny infiltrating with his own memories, you know, getting inside your head, and you know, creating and forming your own perception of the world and yourself. You know, the idea of altering your mind it becomes increasingly incorporated as the future, you know, evolves, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. The question about what's real and what's not.
Yeah. Metaverse. Don't even want to talk about that.
Yeah. Sure. Sure. What'd you think of her character? The memory architect character.
Oh. She wasn't in the movie enough. I mean, she was only in a couple scenes, right? Or a few scenes.
There's the initial scene where you're introduced to her, and he goes and visits her, and then there's the ending scene.
Yeah. I don't think we were able to get attached to her enough and understand her significance enough. I feel like she has a lot of power in the lore, but in the movie she didn't have as much power. Maybe not just power to control, but power to tell the story.
Well, she's a very important character.
Yes.
I don't know how spoiler we want to be. I mean, I guess we should. Spoilers. She's the child.
Yeah, the son. The daughter of Harrison Ford.
Right. She is the child that everyone thinks again, they might be.
Yeah, but she doesn't like, oh no. The ending is right. They meet each other, right? Harrison and her.
It shows with him putting his hand on the glass.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a good story. I think it's also cool how Kay isn't. I like it's that Kay isn't the Jesus character.
Mm.
I like that he is not the chosen one.
That kind of reminds me of what you said about Cypher, how Cypher thinks he's the main character of his own story, you know, mm-hmm. And how, like, you know, Kay or the average Joe, you know, can get, you know, infatuated with this idea that they're the one meant to pursue this special, you know, storyline.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
that is often disappointing.
I mean, one thing I find really interesting, I think I've read it in some review about the movie, was that basically the first Blade Runner is about Deckard, who gets introduced as a human. And then over the course of the movie, it is called into question if he is maybe a replicant. So that is not quite sure. Or, mm-hmm.
There is kind of a subtext of that. You can interpret it that way, sure.
And then the new Blade Runner is basically Kay is a replicant, no question about it. And then there's this plot of him questioning maybe
he's not just a replicant, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So I found that really interesting.
Yes. Yes. I think that is interesting. I also like the character growth of each of them. You know, Deckard going from like humans only. Wait a minute, replicants might actually be people. And then Kay going, I'm a replicant. I know my face. I know my place. Wait a minute. The world isn't this simple. And both of them come to these revelations from opposite directions, which is interesting. Like it brings us to the same point, but from completely different sides of the story. I think that's really cool. Mm-hmm. So, well, tell you what, we're in the middle of the show. We're going to take a break. Got to thank you guys. Got to thank the patrons. And we'll be back to talk a little bit more about Blade Runner when I get done with the middle of the show. Here we go. All right, here we are. We'll make this quick. This is the middle of the show. This is where I get to thank our patrons like these guys. And we have 19 patrons currently. So thank you to all of you. And if this show is helping you get through your work days, your drives to work, your workouts, your learning more about the cyberpunk genre or Cyberpunk 2077 and all that stuff. And who knows, maybe the rumors about the new update for PS5 and all that stuff is legit, and we're gonna get the info maybe coming up this next week. That would be awesome. But if we're helping you get through all that stuff, then go head over to patreon.com/cyberpunklorecast and check out all the different tiers, everything from the bottom tiers where you can get ad-free episodes early to joining us on future episodes of this show, just like these guys are right here. And I would really appreciate that. Also, we don't have any new ratings or reviews in this week, but if you'd like to help us out, you can head over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star rating. And if you do, we'll read it out on a future episode of the show. Or if you are currently listening on Spotify right now, you can do that as well by going to the page where you can see all the different episodes listed, scroll to the top and click the little star button over there on the top left side, where you can leave us a 5-star rating on there as well. It'd be really appreciated and helps a ton. But that's all we got for the middle of the show this week. Thank you again to our patrons. You guys are the best. Let's get back to the rest of the show. All right, guys. So we've talked about the cyberpunk elements of the movie. What do you think from like a personal perspective on the film? I want to get into your thoughts about the movie, how you feel about it. First of all, did you guys enjoy 2049? And how do you feel it holds up in comparison to the original? I know, Lena, let's start with you. I know you're on my side. You think that this movie actually is better than the original? Why do you think so?
Oh my God, why is it better? I like the director. I already made that clear. I like the cinematography. I like the soundtrack by Hans Zimmer and Benjamin Wallfisch. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. I mean, it's just more pleasing to watch. I don't know why, because like, both movies are like really slow paced, and I think you also have to like these kinds of movies to get into it, because if you're like a person who only watches movies like cut, you're gonna hate these kinds of movies. But why is Blade Runner better? Actors, everything. I don't 49. Know. Everything.
Why is 49 better? Everything? Yeah. Do you find... Okay, so one of the reasons why I think this movie is better is that it actually is a more interesting story. I think the story they're telling us is more dynamic. It's smarter. I mean, the original story is smart, but it feels smart for 1982. Does that make sense? And this isn't to like be like, oh, we're so much smarter than people were back then. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that the average person in 1982 consumed this much media. There were only so many movies that came out. There were only so many books to read. There were only so many concepts and ideas floating around in media at that time period. Period. There were just only so many ideas out there. We, 40 years later, have all of those ideas plus the vast volume of media that's been created in the last 40 years, which is probably equivalent to all of the rest of the media that was created during the 20th century before 1982, right? Like, those ideas have been expanded upon and retold and tweaked and changed so much in the last 40 years. And storytellers have become more efficient. They've gotten better at telling stories. They've gotten more interesting. They've gotten better at, we've had so many times had plot twists thrown at us as people who consume media, TV shows and movies and books and video games. We're just so ready for the plot twist, right? We're so ready for it that to actually have a movie that throws us into a world and makes us go, what's going to happen? What's going to happen is exciting. And it's fun again, right? And I think that 2049 does a good job of telling us a more intricate story that's more appealing, comes at an angle that's different than what we would have expected, and does it in a way that is more entertaining than the original movie did. That's my stance on it. Do you think that that idea has any legs? Do you think what do you think about that idea?
I mean, the characters are very well written in the new Blade Runner movie. So
there's just more at their fingertips to play with, in respect to what all you said, ideas, technology available, and just overall ability. Yeah, I enjoyed it better. It was more exciting, a bit more captivating. And for 19, you said 82, right? Yeah, a brilliant movie for 1982. And The Matrix was a brilliant movie for 1999. But, you know, both have lost a tad bit of their magic, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think for a movie in 1982, you expect that the lead character is going to be the important person who figures things out,
mm-hmm.
and makes a decision that's different than everything else and still survives in the end against these ridiculous odds. You know, like you expect that. But in 2049, we get a lead character who is not the special one, a lead character who doesn't survive in the end, right? Mm-hmm. A lead character whose singular purpose in the entire movie is to facilitate putting the pieces of the puzzle together for other people who are more important than he is,
yeah.
who suffers, who loses everything piece by piece throughout the film and gives everything, sacrifices everything for a picture that is bigger than himself, even though he's not human. And I think that that is an inspirational story, because it shows how much of a person that character actually is in this world. I think that story proves the personhood of these non-humans in a way more profound than any story, any way you could have written the original story.
It's almost a metaphor for a soldier, you know, someone who loses everything for a cause greater than themselves.
Right, right. And a soldier that wasn't even human to begin with.
Yeah.
And chooses to do it. And that's the other thing, is that he wasn't programmed to do it. He goes against his programming in order to do it. And that's amazing. You know, in the first film, it's amazing that they can have a child together. It's amazing that a replicant falls in love. That shows personhood. But in this one, you have somebody who chooses to go against the programming for the greater good and sacrifices themselves to do so. And that's also profound and amazing, but in a different way. And I don't think that story could have been written in 1982. I don't think we would have been ready for that as a people. You know, I don't think that story would have resonated. People would have been like, what, this story that doesn't make any sense. Because we didn't have the original story yet. We needed the original story and 40 years of other stories to get to the point where this story makes sense and resonates in a way and sounds profound. Turbo, I know you've got some thoughts on this. I don't want to skip out on you too much. What do you think? Do you agree that And don't feel pressure to agree with me simply because I'm the host of the show or we're friends or whatever. If for any reason you think that the original movie is better in any regard, what do you think? Do you think 2049 stands above the original film? Do you like the original film better? What do you think?
If we're going for which one is more cyberpunk, the second one is better in that thing, because it's better coming across cyberpunk. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just because it's had more time for the cyberpunk genre to come out, because when the first one came out there wasn't really cyberpunk and stuff,
right.
but it influenced, it's like, hey, this is what cyberpunk is, and then eventually cyberpunk solidifies into cyberpunk.
Right. But what do you think about, just in your personal opinion of the films, do you like the second film better? Do you like the first film better? Regardless of how Cyberpunk better. One is, you like the second one better?
I like the second one, but it's just because I'm not that much of a deep person. I'm very, I don't not say like I'm shell, but like, uh-huh. I'm not, and when I come to my movies, I'm not there to get most of the time. I'm not there for it to make me think. I just want to sit back and experience. And the first one made me feel like I need to think better about all this and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It made me think more than the second one. I don't know why.
Okay.
Maybe it's because I've only seen the first one in its entirety, like in one sitting, like twice, and the second one I've seen multiple times.
Okay. I feel like the second one is a deeper film, so, but it's also a little bit more actiony.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Like, I'm more of an action movie, so.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that Turbo says, like, he thinks the first one is the deeper movie, because I was like, Blade Runner 2049 will absolutely lose you if you, like, do not think for the movie. Like, if you stop thinking about the movie, you will not care about the characters or the plot or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to keep up with it. It's the kind of thing where if you don't keep up with it, you're not going to catch the significance of the end of the film at all.
Yeah, it's not something you can be on your phone through.
Definitely not. No, you have to pay attention. So everybody likes 2049 better. You guys are all on the same page as me.
Yeah. What did Logan think?
I tried hard to convince Logan that was the better movie, but I think in the end he still thinks that the original is the better. I mean, you can always use the argument that the first one was the first, and the first one is necessary because without the first, you're not going to get the second, which is fine. Like, that's a fine argument, but there's never a counter argument to that. Like, according to that logic, the first of anything is always better than any sequel. So it's almost kind of an argument that you kind of just have to say, well, okay, yes. But other than that, is it, you know, like,
I guess you have to then credit it for originality. The first one may have been the more original, right? But the second one was just better. You know, they made the most out of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's 40 years. It's amazing to think that movie is now, I mean, 2022, 40 years old. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of crazy that, you know, I mean, I had a similar kind of experience with Star Trek. You know, I realized, wow, in the 1960s, they made a show about humanity exploring what's beyond us. You know, it's kind of cool to see that these humanity's urge to explore ourselves and our place is not a new phenomenon.
Oh, no, in no way at all. I mean, and it's something
philosophy in ancient Greece, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's something that is intrinsic to the human experience.
Yeah. But our means of conveying that has definitely changed. So, like, right now, maybe in the cyberpunk medium, but I don't know. Sorry, I went on a tangent that wasn't related.
But. No, I think it is related. I think to say, like, we started the sci-fi journey in a way previously with other events. What's interesting, I saw a post about Blade Runner and how Blade Runner was influenced by a movie that came out in like 1929. I think it was called something like Metropolis or something. And there are
my dad mentioned that tonight.
There are scenes in Blade Runner that are almost framed. The cinematography, the way the shots are framed are almost one-to-one with this movie from 1929. And the premise of the movie was very similar. It was about synthetic humans, and it was one of the first movies to have androids in it that looked like human beings walking around. And this concept in 1929 of what if 27. Humans... 27. 1927 of what if human beings created androids, and those androids, yeah, there you go. You got a picture of one of them, and it looks like a woman. It looks like a woman, and this concept.
There that, you go. Not
yeah. Shot yeah. It, it's amazing. This idea, like, this is not a new idea. This is, you know, something that almost 100 years ago, people, movie makers, were playing with this idea 100 years ago.
About this image of the actual metropolis.
Yeah, yeah. Gigantic buildings. In 1927,
walkways that you see in Cyberpunk 2077.
Yes, in 1927, the tallest buildings in the world were I mean, very few and far between. Like, I mean, some of the tallest buildings that you can think of today, I don't think even existed in 1927. You know, I mean, just some of the classic ones. You know, I don't know. It's just amazing to think that, like, some of those ideas have been around for a long time. But again, those ideas are not necessarily new. If you think about mythology, the idea of, like, ancient peoples creating through magic a golem or something that is a, you know, this spirit of a person in a synthetic body, or those kinds of things. And is that really a person? Like, these kinds of ideas of personhood and those kinds, you know, if you take a person out of a person, put it in something else, is it still a person? If you animate a structure and give it a personality, is it a person? And moving that into a technological environment is just the next step of that same concept. But that concept has been around for a long, long time.
We bring up the undefinable feature of a soul. What a soul.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this struggles with that question as well. And that happens in 2049. There's the line where Kay's boss says something like, "Oh, well, you don't have to worry about it because you don't have a soul." Right? And he just kind of looks at her and says, "Yeah."
Yeah, like didn't she like say like you've gotten along so far, gotten
along fine. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that thank you.
Yeah, you've gotten along fine so far without a soul. And it's, you know, it's just one of those concepts. It's like, well, what even is a soul? Like, according to your religious beliefs, everybody, depending on your religious belief, you're going to have a different definition, but it's not something you can put in a jar and weigh. You know, like, we can't test it. You know, like, who's to say if things have a soul or even if a soul is even a thing? You can't test it. You don't know. And does a replicant have a soul or not? Maybe it does. Maybe a soul doesn't exist. You don't know.
Yeah.
It's just one of those questions that you'll never, you can't have an answer to, because there's no, you can't have, let me state it this way. You cannot have an objective answer to, because there's no way to study it objectively. You can only have subjective answers to that question, based on beliefs, not based on evidence. So, or observational evidence. So but these are questions that, you know, human beings are going to, we will go to the end of human existence struggling with these questions for the rest of time, and we will still struggle with these questions because it's just the nature of who we are.
It reminds me of how Christopher Nolan explores love and fate as kind of another dimension in Interstellar. You know, how, what are these? They're untangible, but could they be much more powerful than just a word? Could soul just be a means to quantify self-consciousness? You know, so I don't know, mind-boggling,
right? Shit. And if it is, then doesn't Kay prove that he has a soul through his through his actions, through his self-awareness and his ability to make decisions against his programming?
Yeah.
Maybe not a soul, but like some part of humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's just, I don't know. It does bring up a lot of questions. So, okay. So in the end, you guys agree with me. It's too bad Captain Logan wasn't here. Sorry, Captain Logan. maybe I'll have to come back on another episode in order to.
Is he still joining patron chats?
Well, I invited him back if he wanted to come join us, because he's got an open invitation to come join us whenever he wants to, because he's kind of grandfathered in. So, you know, he's my buddy. He's welcome. You guys have any other thoughts on this movie? Do you feel like it? How do you feel like this one fits among the other films we've talked about? Do you like it better than the other films? Do you feel like it's fits alongside them?
It fits alongside them. Definitely. I don't know if it's my favorite.
No?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we going to touch upon Dune?
We could talk about Dune. I don't know how.
I know it's sci-fi.
It's more sci-fi. It's not really cyberpunk. It's more
sci-fi and stuff. I don't view it as cyberpunk enough. The only Dune movie I've seen, I don't know how many they are. I've only seen the newest one, and I've never read the
books. I'm only talking about the new one.
Yeah, there's the old one.
It's Denis Villeneuve who did Blade Runner.
I view it more sci-fi. It's like science fiction, mm-hmm. and with like a little bit of like so far magic right now, like how he can see the future. I see it as magical. I don't know enough about the background to say maybe that's something else, but mm-hmm. I see more sci-fi.
Yeah, it's more sci-fi. There is the Blade Runner TV show, the animation.
I have not got a chance to watch it yet. I do own. I got a chance to. I got a way to watch it, but I have not watched it yet.
So we could talk about that next month. I haven't watched it yet either, but
or the Blade Runner 2049 short films. It was like a 6-minute one, a 15-minute one.
They're short films?
Really? Okay. Official ones?
Yeah.
Official. They're really interesting. There's an anime one, one with Jared Leto.
It's about what happens before the blackout, right?
Right. Yeah, there's the blackout, then the one after and stuff.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I didn't know about those. Yeah, it looks like there's three short films.
Yeah.
Looks like they're available on YouTube. About 24 minutes long if you watch all three of them. That's cool. Okay. Well, yeah, let's chat about that. Would you guys be able to watch the animation?
What's it on?
What is it called? Black Lotus or something like this?
I'll better get to Black Lotus. I'm going to have to look up the shorts.
Yeah, it's Black Lotus is what it's called. It's on Adult Swim.
Hulu.
So, yeah, Hulu, I think, would have it, right?
Yeah. Do you guys want to watch Metropolis? At some point.
Oh, the old film? I don't know if it's even available.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know if it's available.
I think it's one of those films that like it's hard to even find anymore.
Oh shit.
But that would be cool. Metropolis 1927.
Watch movie. Oh. Okay, so I think YouTube Prime Video.
Oh, it looks like you can watch it. That would be interesting.
Yeah, Apple TV.
It's like 2 hours long.
2 hours.
Oh my gosh.
Dude, just the images are like haunting yet beautiful yet.
Yeah.
Just
how do you spell that so I can look it up later?
Metropolis. Metropolis.
Metropolis.
Yeah.
God.
All right. Well, we'll talk more about this. And we'll pick one of these things, but those are all good. Those are all good polls. Metropolis might be really cool as like a, like cyberpunk originator type of movie, like way before anybody even thought cyberpunk was even a thing,
and we're now almost a century after that too.
Yeah,
you know, we're headed into another eras of the 20s,
right? Yeah, it does look like it's available on YouTube. It looks like a few people have made that available. So but it's over 2 hours long. Man, that's a long 1927 movie. Wow. Filmed by F. Lang. Interesting stuff. Well, guys, this has been awesome. Thank you for joining me again. Thank you for being here. And let's go through and let's wrap this up. If you guys have anything you'd like to share, ways that people can get a hold of you, anything cool that you're working on or doing that you want to talk about. And let's start with Turbo. Turbo, you got anything going on?
I have nothing going on.
Nothing? Yeah, I know you're working a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I don't got time for a social life. I have to work.
Oh, well, that's a bummer. Well, tell your boss to get over COVID, get back to work so you can have.
Well, they're over it. They just have to recover and stuff.
Well, tell them to recover and then, and then you can have some more free time maybe. But, I know people can reach you on the Discord. You want to share anything else?
No.
Okay. That's it. All right. Cool, man. Well, see you next month.
Watch Tom on YouTube.
Watch me on YouTube. Because I do YouTube things. Thanks for the shout out. Lena, thanks for joining us again. I know things are busy with you. I know you got you're moving and stuff.
I mean, I'm not moving, but I'm trying to save up a little bit of money for traveling later this year.
You're traveling.
So anyway, I was happy to be here. You can hit me up on the Discord if you like, on the Robots Radio Discord channel.
Awesome. We'll have fun with the travels and stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then J-Ray, you got anything going on?
Yeah, I'm off to London in a couple weeks.
Oh, fun.
For 3 months. Yeah, study at Sotheby's Institute of Art. So, Lena, I think I'll be at the same... Let's see, is it 2:55 a.m. there?
You're going to be in different time zones.
Okay, different time zones. Mm. Germany, London. Yeah, I guess that makes
sense. 1 hour later.
Oh, God, that's brutal. props to you. But, yeah, so judging that, I'll be studying and stuff throughout the week. I don't know if I'll be able to do this anymore, but maybe there'll be the rare occasion I can.
All right, dude.
Anyhow, I can always set an alarm and wake up.
well, we can adjust things too, because this time slot isn't hard and fast anymore now that I'm not doing most of the episode live. So if we need to adjust things and move them on, an earlier time, then we can always make that work. So cool. It was specifically this time because it worked well for me and Logan, but now it's just me. So it's me and you guys. So we can always find a time that works better for everybody. So we can adjust that in the future. But thank you again for being here. Thank you for supporting the show. And man, hopefully this month we get some really good news on Cyberpunk 2077 and the new patch and the new content coming out. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. We've been waiting a long time, but looks like we're finally going to get some new info, and I'm looking forward to it. I'd love to hear some of your perspectives on that stuff too. Maybe we'll be able to talk about that next month. We'll find out. But everybody, thank you for tuning in. You can always find my stuff over on robotsradio.net, including all of my shows and the other shows on the network. Coming up next is the Mass Effect Lorecast. We've got our patron episode coming up in about half an hour. So I'll be doing that next. And then, like Turbo Toboggan said, you can check out a bunch of my stuff on the Robots Radio YouTube channel, including our live streams, which happen on there and on Twitch now, and lots of other places. And all sorts of fun stuff. I'm streaming either podcasts or playing games or whatever every night of the week, except for Saturdays. So I'd love for you to come by and hang out, check out a show, check out a live stream, hang out with me and do some fun stuff like that. So that's what I got going on. Guys, thank you for joining again. And until next time, stay safe in Night City. I will see you next week with a regular episode. And maybe we can actually talk about some big news, because I have a feeling we might get an announcement this week, because stuff is starting to leak out about a PS5 upgrade. So we'll find out. All right, everybody. See you then. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to the Cyberpunk Lorecast. This show is a part of the Robots Radio Network, smart podcasts for interesting people. If you'd like to help support the show, please tell a friend and leave a 5-star review on iTunes. If you'd like to get in contact, please send an email to cyberpunklorecast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at cyberpunklore. Also, join the community on the Robots Radio Discord. The link is in the show notes. The music on the show was written and performed by The Midnight and was used with their permission. Go check them out at themidnightofficial.com. Until next time, stay safe in Night City. We'll talk to you later.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.
When a wasteland detective and a vault girl cross paths, no criminal is safe.
You're both under arrest.
Don't move a muscle if you know what's good for you.
Based in Bethesda's Fallout series, follow Walter and Bunny as they traverse the Texas Commonwealth and New Vegas, busting big crime rings.
We'll need all we can to expand into Vegas territory.
And surviving anything the wasteland can throw at them.
It's him! It's the Mothman!
featuring a series of nail-biting narratives and guest stars from across the Fallout community. It's anybody's guess what thrilling case is up next.
War never changes, does it, Bunny?
No, it certainly does not.
True Vault Escapades, a Fallout audio drama, available anywhere you get podcasts.